Darkness, demons, ghosts outside, screaming you can run but you can't hide. You can't scare me, I'm already dead inside.
Sheldon, Pinchy, Mr. Krabs, and Hermie.
That's all.
That's it.
The most of them, yeah.
Yeah, Sheldon. It's like so fucking annoying. Be creative. Mm. I did. No one's ever heard of my crab puns.
No one's heard of Crabgale?
That's not a comical? No, and I've gotten some comments too. Like the people who aren't fighting are just commenting to go like,
nice name.
That's a great, that's the cutest name I ever heard. And then most people
Crabgale
are
Crabgale is pretty great.
And then people are commenting to say like, I don't think she's actually, because Blueberry is a type. That's like the name for one of the really purple pigmented types of crabs. And Jody just named her Blueberry, but she's not that type. So a lot of the comments were like, I don't think she's a blueberry. Like, that's her name.
That's funny. That's hilarious.
So welcome to the Tex Chris Dave Saw Massacre. Today, at long fucking last, we are watching Leprechaun 2.
It felt like it would never happen. Mm-hmm. We've been looking forward to this day for so long.
And this became the poster child for us suffering and not being able to see the sequel to a movie for a year.
Yeah.
You know?
We were tempted to do it early.
Yeah. And I kind of put it off a little bit. Uh-huh. And that was a mistake. I should have just done it. Like you did with all the Halloween movies.
Right.
I should have.
You were tempted to binge through.
I totally should have. But then, no, we'll just watch it when we watch it.
The difference would be that the Halloween sequels, while terrible, all still at least have double digits on Rotten Tomatoes. Like they have, I think Halloween 2 plus, they all have I think the worst it gets is 13% on Rotten Tomato. Leprechaun 2, 3, and 4, all 0.
0% on Rotten Tomatoes.
0%. No movie critic could find anything valuable in these sequels.
All right, so we are going to submit a review to Rotten Tomatoes to raise the percentage.
We need to bump that up to a 2% for some of these. But who knows? I mean,
the first one to submit a review, maybe it jumps up to 100%.
No, there are reviews. You have to get zero. Otherwise, it's just blank. You have to actually have enough people saying this fucking sucks to get the zero. It's earned.
Yeah, people need to go out of their way. Yeah, just so everyone knows, this movie from a long time ago sucks ass.
And you know what? I would be concerned. If the first Leprechaun was 70% and then it dropped to zero, then I'd be like, sure. Oh, well, clearly the campiness, what worked, what we love, because we fucking love the first Leprechaun. Mm-hmm. What we love about the first one doesn't work in the second one. But the first Leprechaun has something 22% or 23% on Rotten Tomatoes. Okay. So that makes me feel okay. So maybe critics just don't appreciate the brilliance of the campy insanity that is Leprechaun.
Yeah, they don't realize that Leprechaun nails it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't miss the mark. It shows us what the mark truly is.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's Jennifer Aniston's terrible in it, so maybe that contributed.
Could be.
The cast surrounding what was happening, maybe weren't as great as Warwick Davis being the greatest.
Yep.
You're just the greatest screen presence ever.
I have a friend of a friend. Well, I'll just call her a friend. She's the girlfriend of my friend. I don't hate her, but I've only met her this past year. She works for a movie production studio that is making the new Leprechaun movie.
No.
Yeah. And they're filming it in South Africa for a bunch of insane reasons. But they're making the next Leprechaun movie. And they can't get Warwick Davis. There's no way they have money for that. These are straight to TV sequels of Leprechaun that somehow are still coming out. But they got Ollie from the first one, who was the kid.
No way.
Yeah. So Ollie's coming back for the new Leprechaun movie.
That is awesome.
We're not getting there till 2024. We got to do 2, 3, 4. Hood, Back to the Hood. 4 is space.
4 is space.
Then Hood, Back to the Hood, and the other ones.
And then in all that time, the Leprechaun movies that we make.
Absolutely. They should definitely, we understand. We know what makes that first one so good.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And we're about to add a lot more information to our understanding of the Leprechaun universe.
I'm getting increasingly pumped the more I realize we're about to watch Leprechaun 2.
I know. This is the thing. This was what started off. First of all, the Leprechaun episode a year ago on St. Patrick's Day started.
Mm-hmm. This Dave and Christy was the first Leprechaun.
There we go. We'll just do that. It started this Dave and Christy. It started franchises in general with us. That was,
is that true?
That's where we decided that monthly we're going to start knocking out a franchise and sequels, so that we used that to introduce some huge ones like Halloween,
dude,
and Friday the 13th.
Right. Which is actually crazy for us, just to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Because we, like, the last three or four months, we haven't had any franchise sequels because we didn't do that at the start of our podcast.
Yes.
And now as we go into this, we start to go into the spring, summer months, we're going to have to do so many fucking sequels to franchises because we did so many in those months.
Yeah, exactly.
Starting with Leprechaun.
Mm-hmm. So that starts there. And it's, like I said, it's the first of these movies where we realize we have to wait a whole fucking year to get another dose of this.
Yeah.
And it gets very, very hard with movies that are so, so great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And I think Leprechaun also might have been one of the first ones that was a cult classic that hit us. Like, there wasn't a ton for a new viewer to love unless you really steer into the weirdness of it and what not the mainstream reviewers are going to love about movies.
Right. Yes.
It immediately, the cultness of it caught us right off the bat.
I think you nailed it. I think, like, up until maybe the Leprechaun episode, we viewed this horror podcast as we're only going to watch like scary movies. We didn't like really explore the horror genre into the campy aspect of it, which is now a part that we love and we've done a bunch of episodes on.
Yeah, it's hugely important.
Yeah.
Like, there's a real atmosphere and culture now in Texas Chris Dave saw where, like, we need, if we're going to do a real dark movie, we also want like a light movie that's some horror comedy going on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going back to the 70s and 80s. We're going like 2017 and 18. We're bouncing all around, and I feel like Leprechaun is one of
the
things.
Was essential in opening us up in that way.
It opened us up because we also started like doing things that we had already seen, that, you know, things that we knew a lot about, you know, this director, we have this director in common, stuff like that. Leprechaun was a really great like foot in the water, testing out a new dimension of horror for this podcast.
Just because it was St. Patrick's Day and we're like, let's put this up, set up for it.
Yeah, this is intuitive enough to do Leprechaun on St. Patrick's Day. We like drinking beer.
So we were really sad and continuously sad throughout last summer about how, like, oh, we have to wait a full year to do all the sequels. But now they're going to start hitting us real quick. We're going to be we're going to have to start watching like Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Phantasm 2. And I'm so pumped to do all of that.
Yes, exactly. Leprechaun was the seed for a bunch of these movies that are now like open loops in my head. I'm like, I want more.
Exactly. And now we get to start teasing it. And maybe some of those you'll do what I did with Halloween and just plow through all of it. And it'll be great to hear back on whatever. Just let it happen naturally.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. Cause there is also something fun in movies specifically like Leprechaun. Like, I kind of want to go in, like, I want you guys to hear after the chainsaw noise, my enthusiasm having just seen Leprechaun 2 for the first time.
Yeah, we have no idea. Maybe we'll be disappointed. Yeah,
maybe we're going to go like, what the fuck was that? I quit this podcast. Who knows? But I mean, this is what it's been about.
Absolutely. The log line, this is all the information that I got on this movie. I didn't look up much more.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, I can tell you that it's directed by Rodman Flender, who did Idle Hands, the director of Idle Hands.
Mm, okay.
So he went on to do that's also now a cult classic.
Yeah.
I loved it as a teen. I haven't seen it since then. Maybe we should do it at some point.
I could be down for that.
Do you remember that one? Devon Sawa?
Kind of.
Do you even know the premise?
It's essentially, not off the top of my head.
Oh, no. My God. So Devon Sawa gets his hand cut off and then they put a new hand on him, but it's the hand of a serial killer.
Yes, yes,
so
yes,
the
yes,
hand
yes.
is going around it's killing
the
people.
Possessed hand, of course.
Yeah.
Like, I know that.
Silly, ridiculous, but I remember it being so fun and Seth Green is in it and there's some weird zombie stuff happening too. Anyways.
Sure.
And so this director also did a ton of TV, including Dawson's Creek, including MTV's Scream. So he still remained and is employed in the genre.
Okay.
And it's written by Turi Meyer and Al Septeen, who also wrote TV like Smallville and Vampire Diaries. So we're having some ingredients of people who do kind of more teeny melodramatic. So okay. I'm curious to see
So what year is this movie?
This is 1994.
Okay.
1 year after Leprechaun. One year. So this is this is a rush job.
Or they had plenty of time to make the quality or the caliber of movie we're about to see. We'll see about that. But so these people, though, went on to do those things.
They both did some before, but all the credits that I mentioned happened decidedly after the sequel. Yeah.
Yeah, that's encouraging. That leaves this a mystery as for what they're going to be, what their niche in terms of like writing and creating is going to be.
Absolutely. And as I was saying, the only thing I got from the plot is just the one sentence log line. I didn't want to know anything else, but this is just a little teaser to bring us in. And maybe you read it too. On his 1,000th birthday, he's 1,000 years old. It's his birthday. An evil leprechaun selects the descendants of one of his slaves to have as his bride, leaving it up to the girl's boyfriend to save her. So already we're like, what are you talking about? What does this have to do with...
All right, so like, what I just learned from that log line is leprechauns have slaves. Yeah. And that leprechaun slaves go on to have long family lineages. Like 10 generations go by.
Yeah, 1,000 years have passed.
Well, since he was born. So no, he probably wouldn't have a slave.
Since the slave was born.
As a one-year-old leprechaun, he probably wouldn't have slaves at
that point.
That's
true. So at least.
We don't know what we're talking about, Chris.
We don't.
We don't know about leprechauns.
But it sounds like real melodramatic.
I love that.
There's like a weird triangle happening. Like,
and that his goal won't be to kill her or to get his gold coins back, but marriage is what he wants.
Oh my god.
He's probably just trying to take her. But he's small. How's he going to do that?
I don't know.
He's going to have a little vehicle.
Is there going to be like a little like wedding thing set up? I can't. There's so much like this
he's
idea.
He's going to have a little suit.
This idea is gold. Like
it's
I can't.
The best.
If it's done right, but we'll have to see.
Maybe I love what you just said. If it's done right.
Yeah.
That was almost academic, man. It's like, well, this is a great premise. We have the classic Warwick Davis coming back to fulfill his classic role.
And that's what matters, is that Warwick Davis is in the house being the leprechaun.
Yes.
That's
what we come to, that's what we pay to see.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course. Let's do a quick scare and tell, huh?
Yeah, let's do it. Scare and tell. What was your week like in horror, Chris?
I saw, and it's not necessarily pure horror, but come on, it's a sci-fi horror movie, Annihilation by Alex Garland. Have you watched this yet?
Nope, and I'm very excited. Go easy on me, Chris.
I will totally go easy on you, and I won't say too much, but it is just amazing. It's so exciting. It's a little sad that it's getting a straight to Netflix release in most of the world, and it's going to have only a limited theatrical run.
Okay.
And it's also sad that it came out the week after Black Panther, because this kind of movie, you want to see AVX, you want to see on IMAX, you want to see on the biggest screen possible, but all the screens are tied up with Black Panther right now because it's doing so fucking good.
Mm.
So I'm sad that it's not getting more of a press. And even like it came out over the weekend, it's got pretty great reviews.
It's got really great reviews.
Yeah, yeah. I think like 80s, early, low 90s.
For a high concept sci-fi.
And it is the highest of concepts. It's so fucking weird.
I've been doing my like sideways glance research.
Yeah, try not to like find out too much.
I just want to like, but like I want to find like reviewers who I trust and like just say some stuff about it so I know kind of what I want.
Just know that it's just like kind of a lot of biology based sci-fi, really messing with reality. You don't really kind of know what's happening.
Yeah, and like, I'll stop. I was about to say something that might have even been a spoiler for my own research, but never mind.
Yeah, and it's based on this novel by Jeff Garland, who I haven't read that novel, but I've read another novel that he wrote that is more recent one. And like a lot of the stuff is in kind of that same vein where it's apparently a weird new subgenre of science fiction called weird literature that really is driven by things like our current state of ecology. Like, okay, kind of fucked. So how do we envision a weird alternative future based on like the ever evolving, mutating, ecological sphere. So, I can't wait to go back. Cause it's so,
that's the best. That's the most like, that's brain food, dude. That's so satisfying.
Absolutely. And it's just the way like you're seeing weird mutated things.
Yes.
And just,
yes, that's what I was going to say is it seems like there's some, one of the things I saw is like the director goes into like the creature, this sort of creatures or whatever. And I'm like, turn off. Don't want
to
see.
You're going to love it. You need to see that ASAP. But I'm itching to go back too, because it was so satisfying. And there's just so much to like go back and be like, okay, what actually is happening here? What's going on at these moments? The performances are incredible. It's got
Natalie Portman.
It's got Jennifer Jason Leigh, who we watch in Existence. Mm. And there's a lot of parallels between Existence and this one.
Cool.
Because you know, Existence got weird with biology, right? You're like in a different world. Yeah. So here, this is what creatures are like here. Mm. There's a lot of that. So it was kind of trippy to see her in this one as well.
Yeah. And we didn't watch that one on the podcast. We watched that. Just you and me watched it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Existence is so cool. If you haven't seen that, check it out. Cronenberg.
And first, go check out Annihilation because it's in the theaters now. All right. We need, like, I want movies like that to be supported so we'll get more of those stories on the big screen because it's so fucking weird. It's like, I can't believe this movie is getting this big of a release, but it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's nice to see those things in theaters, but, like, there are more asses in seats at home on the couch. So, like, people are going to see Annihilation, you know?
And I think
if they make
a
big enough deal, like, you know, you're cutting advertising out of your budget and that goes directly into the sale to Netflix.
Right.
It makes sense.
Yeah, it's just it's the visuals in this movie. Like, you want to see as big as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So. But by the time this episode comes out, I think it's going to be on Netflix. So
awesome.
enjoy Scaredy Cats.
Yeah.
If you, especially if you love things like Pandorum, like Event Horizon, mm-hmm. like Existence. Yes. It's right in the vein of all of those.
Fuck yeah.
And I'm so excited now because a lot of people who have read the book say it's so different than the book. Like, and some people say that's a problem. But then other people, I saw some voices saying, oh, no, see the movie first because the movie's so good, even though it does something different than the book, and then read the book. So I'm very excited to go back and read this book, which is part of a trilogy, actually, this two sequels.
Oh, interesting. So, well, that also fits in with, like, The Ritual is apparently very different than the book it's based on, like, the way that it ends.
We got a comment about that, right? Or a message? Someone...
On Instagram, I think, somebody mentioned...
One of you scaredy cats.
Yeah, said something about how, like, I really would have liked them to steer into... the ending of the book. I'm like, that's cool. Like, so I don't know exactly what that means. And I tried not to, like...
She said it goes, like, haywire or balls to the wall, which is crazy to think about The Ritual going more off the deep end.
I feel like we got tastes then of it, like how these guys were, like, going crazy because of the stuff they were seeing.
Right.
Like, I think maybe...
It leans into that a little bit
maybe
more.
Maybe the one guy's escape takes a really long time and he goes a little crazy and we
Please
learn.
Read that. Please.
I should. Yeah. That'll throw that into my year of reading books. Heck yes. Great. I'm loving horror books.
Perfect.
But yeah, like I did rewatch The Ritual just because I'm talking about it. Might
right,
as well
yes.
throw that in.
You're a scare and tell. Let's
see I watched The Ritual last night again with Jody for the first time. She loved it. It was just so great.
How could she not?
And she actually missed the hand on the tree.
She didn't see it?
She didn't see it, so I paused and went back.
Again, maybe we had the advantage of seeing it on the giant screen where that hand is like the size of a person in front of our eyes, whereas on your TV at Little home, TV. The hand isn't as noticeable.
Yeah, and I was mentioning it to you and not Scaredy Cats, but me and Jody watch horror movies on Sunday afternoons typically, so it's kind of a brighter room and there's more glare on the TV, so it was hard to see. I was like sitting right close to the TV the second time I played it and I could see it clearly, but it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very subtle feature, but oh God, is it? I was really captivated by the concept that this creature was like leading them around. Mm-hmm. And then on this viewing, I was watching real close. Right when they're walking in after seeing the VW wagon, that Volkswagen station wagon thing, they go into the tree line. And right as they penetrate the tree line, there's a shot of Hutch, like the leader guy, with his compass. And he's like tapping on the face of his compass.
Right.
Like all of a sudden it's pointing a different direction than they were walking, which is this little shortcut they're going to try. And he alters their course by like a few degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a quick little throwaway thing. And then later when he... Spoiler, if you haven't seen it, stop right now for 30 seconds or whatever. When he dies, they find his body, they go to the tent and stuff. He doesn't have the map on him at all, so they don't know where to go. All they have is the compass to follow the direction.
Right.
Which is also another little cool thing, is that this inside of this thing's like forest. It seems like it completely controls like...
The route people will be going.
Yeah, where people are going to be going, and they keep stumbling into shit because of it. Loved that. Mm-hmm. It is so well told. That story and all the rules and stuff are so well shown.
Man, I just fucking love the good Lost in the Woods and the evil force in the woods controlling them. Like, so I love the Blair Witch movies so much.
Yeah.
So I love this one. Woodsploitation. Give me more. Give me more.
Heck yes. Heck yes. It's just great. If you haven't seen it, please see it.
Oh God. Yeah.
It's one of my favorites of this year.
Hell yeah. End of last year.
End of last year and the year before. But in 1988 when it was first made, I don't know.
And with that note, let's go back in time to... Leprechaun's 1000th birthday.
Chris, David. I couldn't be more excited to do this.
We're looking so lovingly in each other's eyes as we're about to take this journey together.
I'm just gonna get down on one knee real quick.
Feels like an anniversary of such.
Chris, would you watch Leprechaun 2 with me?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yes. Yes, yes I will. Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers. We did it.
Oh, did we ever?
Mm-hmm. Feels good.
All right. So the first thing I want to say about Leprechaun 2 is how fucking dare Rotten Tomatoes call this a 0%. How dare they?
How, like, just they don't get it. Clearly, critics do not get what this franchise is, what it's trying to do.
It's abysmal that happened, especially because this movie is as good as the first one. 100%. Like... And I have some examples for why I think that.
I'm with you. This thing is incredible and so fun, but like, how can no critics be like,
not
yeah,
one person,
camp, hilarious value, it is so fun all the way, like, how is there no critic that has
not one person that? Like, oh, they tried really hard with the gore, mm-hmm. they never dropped the ball when they were making the movie, it's just silly.
No, it's just supposed to be silly, dumb, fun with over the top punchlines,
mm-hmm. and gore, and somewhat cool gore.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exploding leprechaun at the end.
I was gonna say, like, Leprechaun 1, they burned him up, and we had like a melty robot looking leprechaun.
Right,
thing.
I forgot about that.
They fucking blew him up in Leprechaun 2.
I hope in every Leprechaun we get an insane leprechaun death, like at the end of every single one.
Yeah, and like, what is the connection from 1 to 2? Is there anything in common? It doesn't seem like it.
Does this plot no, because if anything, Leprechaun 1 actually happens in between the beginning of Leprechaun 2 and the rest of Leprechaun 2, because we go back in time. Right, we go back in time 1,000 years ago, yeah. when it's his 1,000-year-old birthday.
On his 1,000-year birthday, he tries to marry the daughter of his leprechaun slave,
which, if now the present day is 1990
Four.
Yeah. When this is actually happening, which means that he's born around the time of Christ.
All right, go on, continue this thought.
When we did our first Leprechaun, or actually some episodes soon thereafter, we were pitching different ideas of what to do, and one of them was Leprechaun, where Leprechaun is around at the time of Jesus and is the one who actually crucifies Christ. That's God. Our sequel, because he's well, no, he's like,
you're
born
sorry.
Around the time of Christ, like.
We got
They're
that.
Mapping it out.
Canon has lined up for us in
it's
our pitch.
Perfectly lined up.
He was around in the
it's
time
not,
of Christ.
It's not unreasonable. Like, no, according to what the series has set up, mm-hmm. very clearly, he was around. He was probably a child leprechaun, but he was around at the time of Christ.
Yeah, he was a little leprechaun walking around.
Wow.
That was funny, because when this started, we both know that it's on his 1,000th birthday. This is what we got from the logline. His 1,000th, so hard to say, birthday. He tries to marry like the descendant of his slave, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we thought going in, but no, he was alive for 1,000 years, and they're like, darn, I'm gonna have to wait for another 1,000 years.
Yeah,
then we get Leprechaun again.
I thought we were gonna be in the year like 1,000 the whole time when this thing set itself up.
I thought for sure that what was gonna happen at the end of this movie is he was gonna get locked away in that box, because that's how they find him in the first one, right?
Yeah, but this technically takes place in, again, this is the point we were trying to make at the start. This takes place in 94. The first one takes place in 93. And even so, that first one happens in between the 1,000 years where he's waiting for this bride.
Yeah.
Because then within that, there's already the earlier incident that happens like in the 20s when he gets locked in a box. Because they show him getting
You're
locked in a
right.
box in the beginning, and then he gets free in the 90s. So in between waiting for his bride, he got like stuck in a box for a while.
So they like, oh my God, you're totally right. So he...
This is a sequel and a bit of a prequel.
And yeah, we get a ton of backstory on the leprechaun and about like the lineage, from how he went from Ireland to America and is in like a gift tree
and
from the Irish.
And the lineage of this this granddaughter as told through us through a moving picture.
Yeah.
And we saw about 9 women,
mm-hmm.
which means these women on average had their daughter at the age 110 on average.
Some a little less,
some a little more.
Yeah, the generations were a century.
Unless those like ivy lines were supposed to represent like, and then like 10 more women.
Or yeah, maybe there was some male heirs, or he was also saying at the beginning that he's going to wait until there's a fair enough one. Like that was another thing. So maybe they were like ugly.
So
or
which
men,
is it, 1,000 years or a fair one?
Well, I think he can't get married again until 1,000 years have passed. So what they would have said is that he's going to go beyond this person potentially if she was like, you know, a boy.
But what a fun, like, what an insanely wonky way to start the thing. Okay, so we're back in the year 1000, or I guess more accurately, 994 AD, right?
Yeah.
So we're in 994 AD in the forest somewhere. Everyone's speaking perfect modern day English with an Irish accent.
You got it.
And he's chasing this guy, and this guy is terrified for his life. He's like running, fighting against it, or whatever.
Yeah.
The leprechaun whips his hands, which he does a lot in this one. I don't remember that as much in the first. Like,
he's more of a magician in this
one. He's more like, there's more hand movement to his magic.
Sorcery is happening left and right.
Yeah. Submits this guy. This guy's now his slave. all of a sudden we turn on a dime and it's kind of like a buddy comedy for a while. Like the leprechaun and his slave is like, yeah. Am I going to be her slave too?
How are you going to get this fair maiden?
Yeah.
they just start working together right away. Uh-huh. Yeah, dude, you're right.
Find a clothing line and a woman putting up clothes at the clothing
behind
line.
Behind a sheet.
If this was his daughter, he'd know like, this is my daughter's clothing line and we're in her area of the forest. This is her backyard.
This is her house.
Yeah. Instead, like with silhouette, don't recognize her at all.
Aye, she's fair. No, that's me daughter.
But why would such a lass marry you monster? God bless you, child.
And then he's just like, oh, wait, that's my daughter.
Yeah.
No, leprechaun, that's my daughter.
And then as a result, he gets killed.
So, well, he said, bless you on the third sneeze.
Yes.
That's what gets him killed. God bless you, my dear. And that was even kind of like, for me, the tiniest little bit, I'm like, that's the good job, father character. I mm-hmm. respect you. Mm-hmm. It was a good move. You saved her.
It was such a crazy, insane character arc for this character we knew for about a minute and a half. Yeah. Like, just to watch all the shit happen to him. Like, he's terrified and escaping the leprechaun. He's just kind of like, then he's like, just yielded to the leprechaun and he's kind of like having a conversation with him. Well, I guess I'm your slave now.
Yeah.
Then he's like, I got to turn against leprechaun to save my daughter. It was such a dense thing before we even got the credits.
Yeah. Well, it shows us, let's get real about this, talk about leprechaun.
All right,
it shows something that's great monster logic in that they're tricky. That comes up like a bunch of times, not just that he's doing tricky things, but like that's the crux of a scene or a crux of something happening. So he tricks this guy and be like, if you want to be free, all you gotta do is help me get married. Just say that that's cool. Basically, when he shakes the leprechaun's hand, he's saying like, you get to have my daughter or someone in my lineage.
Yeah.
You know, or I guess he says you can have my daughter.
But then doesn't he kill the guy?
He does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he blesses his daughter and she goes free.
And he has to like wait 1,000 years because she's been like her.
And then his corpse is the one down in his tree fort.
Yeah. Yeah. That's his corpse.
With his jaw like and atrophied he fights him to the side.
So that character in the beginning turns into a skeleton that fights the main character near the end.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Because the leprechaun can't technically harm someone who has a gold coin, but he can manipulate objects to harm people with the gold coin.
And trick the people with the gold coin to try to like let go of it and put themselves in danger or whatever.
His tricks are always so obvious, but that's what makes it enjoyable to watch it. You're like, the characters are so dumb in this world that they know they're dealing with a manipulative leprechaun at all times, and they always fall for his shit.
Yeah, every time. That's the trickiness of the leprechaun is like also a hex, you know, a little bit of a jinx in and of itself.
Which brings us to Morty. What's the relationship? Is that his grandpa?
Who cares?
Do we ever get that?
I don't know.
It's just like a drunken old man and this guy.
It could be. My brain didn't tell me to like
On to anything either.
Yeah, it didn't matter until I'm like, wait, this character is really funny and is in a lot of scenes. I really should have paid attention to who he is.
They're like literally the Rick and the Morty of the early 90s. The drunken old dude.
Dude.
His name's Morty. And the younger guy who's like helping him run his company.
It's Rick and Morty. Oh my God. And yeah, he has this great plan. So that takes us to like the dead center of the movie.
Wait, what's the guy's actual name? The younger one?
Cody.
Cody.
Yeah.
Cody and Morty.
So Morty has this great idea when the leprechaun catches them in the bar, which is awesome. Because at that moment, what the drama is they're trying to dodge the cops, which is so good because Cody is basically
getting framed for all the leprechaun's shit.
Which this movie is fucking awesome. It may be better than the first leprechaun, which is basically a leprechaun is in a basement.
Yeah, well, and a leprechaun is trying to get, it's just he's trying to get his coin back, and the one guy has his coin, and he's killing everyone in his path.
Yeah.
This, you have a more elaborate, detailed story. We're in a city. We're not in, like, a small town outside of a small town in the middle of dusty nowhere.
Yeah, he's trying to get married, and then his coin gets lost along the way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hodgepodge of a bunch of different things, but the logic, if you, look into it, and if you decide to really look into the logic, it all works, and it follows the rules, and that's really satisfying.
I really like how much they lean into the manipulation in this one, especially with the other guy who was trying to romance Cody's girlfriend, and they make him, like, blind to the fact that he thinks he's seeing her, but really he's leaning into...
That's like a fucking Oculus moment.
It's an awesome scene. And also, what is that thing? That double blade thing that he's throwing his face in?
That is just...
Like, tell me what that machine is.
I'll tell you what it is.
Was it a lawnmower propped up sideways? Like,
that maybe be
it's two spinny blades.
That's pretty intelligent. I just thought like that was just something they made up to represent the danger of those two boobs.
Yeah, you know? Like, yeah. Basically, the center is like the red nipples, and the blades are flying. But it's like, what is that machine? I'm only questioning it now on reflection. In the moment, I'm like, oh, watch out for those blades.
I remember looking at it and being like, he made some sort of Saw style torture machine. It just reminded me of Oculus. In Oculus, she made a big swinging pickaxe thing.
Hell yeah.
And this one he made as a saw thing. But you're right. It's probably a lawnmower on its side or something. And yeah, he's so hexed, you know, by like horniness that he like sticks his face into two saw blades and blood flies everywhere. When you see
would
a shell
have a little more gore. I wonder if they had to dial that back to get a certain rating or something, because I hated that it was implied that we just had to look at the leprechaun's reaction.
Yeah, no, well, we saw a shadow of it. We saw his like silhouette getting like, chewed up, and then we saw him hanging upside down outside, and his face is all mangled. Mm-hmm. You're right. I would have liked that too, but I think they did pretty good for what was happening.
What is it with the 80s? Going back to Friday the 13th, and then there were a couple other ones we've watched where it's just a trope of a body hanging outside a door. You open a door and a body is hanging upside down, facing there. That like that happens so much around this time period for some reason.
Something about like stumbling into a body when you're already scared.
When you specifically open a door and the body's upside down.
Dead Space does that too.
Yeah.
You know, you walk in through an automatic door opens and the body just flops down, hanging from the ceiling.
Specifically flops, and it's still like mid-swing.
Yeah, they have to have some movement to them too. So like they're both dead. Like, very obviously dead, but very recent and very staged. There's something creepy about it.
So Morty's got a tour company, a scary Hirsch mobile kind of thing. Drive around. Where are they? Los Angeles?
I guess.
Drive around Los Angeles. Cause
where did Houdini live?
Los Angeles? I don't know. Vegas?
LA. That's Houdini.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
All right. Driving around, whatever. He's a complete alcoholic.
Oh my god. He was so, like, we are introduced to him. He's trying to sell like 5% of the franchise to a passed out drunk guy at the bar. And he grabs him by the head and nods his head.
You've made an investment.
And I do love that, like, later in the story when Morty finally believes him, that they go back to this bar, like, as like their plan, you know?
Totally.
They end up back there. They're hiding in the bathroom for a little bit, and then they go out and have a drinking contest with the leprechaun,
which just is the craziest sequence. But of course, like, you have like a genius thing to write in. Like, they drink the leprechaun under the table, and then the leprechaun
has a great rhyme about it.
A couple. I think they're throwing them back and forth.
Yeah, it's like something if you're able, but if you drink with me, you'll be under the table.
And then he drinks four bottles of whiskey.
And all the little people are like cheering for him, like, one of us.
Insane.
Like, that was crazy. And it's like, that was good because you could see it on Warwick Davis's face. And I mean, it seems crazy for me to say that somebody put in like sort of a memorable performance in a leprechaun movie, but like Warwick Davis, you could see him being like, I'm not here to have your shit. And then Morty like gets the whole bar looking at him, and you can see like the pressure of that gets to the leprechaun a little bit. And then like when all the little people start cheering for him, like who are dressed up as leprechauns, he like,
it actually gets under his skin.
He gets under his skin.
He has to prove that he can drink better than anyone.
Yes.
And Drunk Leprechaun is a great leprechaun. I hope we return to that in more sequels because it's wonderful. His eyes are just kind of flailing all over the place. He can barely stand. It's pure entertainment.
So remember in the first one how he got like probably 6 or 7 times he got shot, some green goo came out of him, and that was our favorite thing.
Yeah, we got no goo in this one.
In this one, well, we got Drunk Leprechaun. We got him, he got kicked a bunch, he got stabbed a bunch, he got put in a box. Like, this movie felt like equal in the fact in how
exploring
much screen
the
time
leprechaun and, time and, yeah, and different facets of that, for sure.
Yeah, and letting people bash him, you know, and he stumbles back, but he's still mostly in control. We got another scene of him in a car.
Bigger car. They had to upgrade.
Yeah,
there's something hilarious in the first one about how tiny the car was that he was driving. But this one was more of like a badass, I can run over someone with this thing.
And can I say two things about that? In the bar scene, when they're saying, we got to get out of here, he's like, he's already here. That moment, I'm not scared, but that moment was like one of the kind of creepy when you could see that like full made up leprechaun like tapping his fingers down
at the end
bar.
Of the table. I love it because it's like he's biding his time. Like, he's there and
it's St. Patrick's Day, so nobody, like, everyone can see him, but they're not thrown off by the fact there's a little leprechaun sitting there. Mm-hmm. Everyone's fine. And that's so foreboding to me. I'm like, that's a good kind of horror reveal. That looked really creepy.
It was a genuinely creepy moment when he's looking down the bar at them, just because he usually has a dumb smile on his face.
He wasn't.
But he was glaring in that moment.
And that was creepy. And another thing I found really like sort of maybe intimidating was when he was in that car and the Cody fell down on the track and this car like swerves back like right in front of him. Right the moment before he drove through and realized he couldn't hurt him.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, that car is so mobile and it moves way faster and more agile than this person is. And I felt like, yep, this is a really effective weapon.
Huh.
Not your typical car. You dive out of the way once and it can't get you. You know, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ, he's dead right now. And he would have been if it wasn't for the the gold coin protection thing.
Those go-karts look so much cooler than any go-karts I ever
rode. Yeah, they look like little race cars.
They totally did. And the track was wider. It didn't have real boundaries. Yeah, like I would drive go-karts if that was the circumstance.
Yeah, if there was like a possibility for like a fiery pileup like there is in real NASCAR, then sure, it'll be way more fun.
Yeah, and a leprechaun driving one of them around that I can smash into.
That he like dressed up with bones and spikes and shit and mm-hmm, skulls. Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Also, with the illusion stuff and Morty's drunkenness, the Three Wishes scene was wonderful.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Like, of him both, like, using his trickery to get out of the thing and using it to kill him at his own wish. Like, it's wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Just so good. I want your gold. And it starts, like, his belly starts distending.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was, like, another one of those visceral things, like, oh, I'm feeling that. That would be bad.
And it was, like, they didn't lean too heavily into the gore or showing you too much. It was more just, like, a swelling stomach.
Yeah.
You know, which is very easy to do without even much effects at all.
Yeah, and
but it's still really, like, you felt that.
The performance of the guy going, yeah, like, oh, you're like, holy shit, you just got fucking, like, 15 pounds of metal inside of you. Fuck.
And it's so disappointing because they fucking had him. Yeah. Like, when he's in that thing, that's even better than a box with a four-leaf clover on
top.
That
was best.
That's a wrought iron steel case. Like, if you just pour that thing into sinking sand or something, then end of story.
And just destroy the, like, locking mechanism.
Yeah.
Just, you know, pour molten metal all over that. More wrought iron. It doesn't matter. Like, they had him. And that was so satisfying to see him caught, but you knew, just based on the timestamp in the movie, that it wasn't over.
And the six sequels
that
we know exist.
And there's that.
But yeah, no, you want like a taste of that. You want to know that it's possible to actually contain the leprechaun. Like, yeah, he'll break free, but we want to know that they almost had him.
Yeah, and like good visually good like storytelling in that, like, early on when he throws that like iron like fire poker at him and he catches it instead of getting stabbed by it. He catches it and it goes right around his hand. He goes, ow, and he throws it down.
It's great. It wasn't overly delivered at that moment. It's showing and you, not telling you.
You even said, you're like, did that hurt him? I was like, nah, he's fine. It just looked like he caught it to show that he can't be hurt by it.
Yeah.
But no, it's showing that like wrought iron, and then get up in the book, wrought iron hurts them. And so he's inside of that like safe, and as he touches the walls and the ceiling, it goes red.
Yeah,
it's genius. It shows like I could tell that it's in turmoil without them going, like, even though they said wrought iron about 16 million times.
Yeah,
they didn't need to. You know,
it's a wonderful sequel. It's building on everything that we knew from the first one, but it's giving you a few more rules.
Yeah.
Like, oh, and by the way, now wrought iron can harm him, and gold coins, if you have them, you are. Like, in the first one, I think the gold coins take away the extent of his power. Remember, he couldn't, like, zap things
because
he didn't have all his gold coins.
He didn't have enough.
Yeah, in this one, it's also showing that if you have one of the gold coins, he can't harm you, per se.
Yeah, he's got to trick you into giving it back before he can do anything.
Totally. So it's not violating. Like, is Halloween, that whole, as that franchise unfolds, it just keeps, like, denying the rules that it sets up earlier. At least with this second one, it's, like, perfectly building on the first one.
And it gives us some more logic that we can chew on and use in a new story.
That doesn't contradict the first.
Exactly. It doesn't contradict anything. It just, they say, I understand the leprechaun a little bit better, and the hijinks that we just saw all make sense. All just makes sense. And it's so helpful.
It's so funny and silly and perfect to just have this whole thing orienting around him just trying to get a bride. Like, that's such a weird, bizarre, insane, like, endeavor for this sinister leprechaun.
But he gets a bride, and then he just needs to go out and get his coin back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where all of the hijinks happen from there on out.
Absolutely.
And I love how her plan, when she was, like, locked up, is she found that owl thing to, like, make holes with, that pokey thing.
AWL. Owl.
Owl. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Really pronounce it, and it just sounds like I'm saying owl.
Owl.
Owl, you know? Like, whoo. And, yeah, that's her big plan, and she's like, I'm going to seduce him and everything so I can get close enough.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just tries to stab him, and he's like, no!
I love how it just, like, bends. Like,
yeah, it bends. He's like, wait, what the fuck were you? You were hey, you rat! Like, that was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And something else that was really great, Michael McDonald.
What a fun little cameo before that guy had a big career. I looked on IMDb. This is only, like, his second or third credit that he's ever done. Way before Mad TV.
Way before, of course, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then we both recognized him right away.
I'm like, is that Michael McDonald? And then his scene is so funny. He's, like, the worst in the world. Because the leprechaun's nursing a hangover, which was so good.
That's the whole point of the scene. There's nothing else that's really happening there. Like, there's no reason for that scene to happen other than the leprechaun is nursing a hangover at a coffee shop.
Being antagonized by the barista.
Yes, and he's downing cappuccinos. Like, he's got, like, five empty mugs on the table, and he throws back another cappuccino. And he's like, oh.
He's, like, rubbing his head. Stuff.
The barista's like, can you get out of here? I need to close. I've made you six cappuccinos. Like, I gotta move on.
Oh, you just want me gold, do you? It's like, what? Are you a little... short,
and then
he's laughing,
and then death by coffee steamer. Like, that's what all Leprechaun scenes need to have, is you have like a fun character actor coming in, doing a weird scene, progressing the plot slightly, but have a cool death with some kind of weird device. It was the pogo stick.
I was gonna
Leprechaun
say
Leprechaun 2.
Yeah, this is the spiritual pogo stick.
Yeah,
yeah. Then that was my exact point I was about to make. You nailed it.
And you need to have those.
You
in these
need
movies.
That is just these weird kills that just do not need to be there.
But they're so pleasing.
Funny. They're gratuitous. They take forever. Mm-hmm.
And they're building so slowly. And you know it coming. Like, the steamers are rising. You're like, oh, shit.
He gets both his hands stabbed down into the counter first.
Which, where else did we see that? Is that Mayhem? Is that Mayhem? That he gets just his hand stabbed to the...
To Steven Yeun. Yeah. Wow, that was insane.
That did not disappoint.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. That movie is so good. Leprechaun 1 and 2 mm-hmm. have like what we talked about, like Scream 1 and 2. They seem like the same, maybe not the same story, but the feel is so carried on from one to the next.
Absolutely. And I was worried with even with the zero rating, I thought, oh, well, maybe if like 23% that the first one got was due to people recognizing that inherent camp value, maybe the second one botches that. It doesn't.
Not at all.
And it makes me so excited for 3 and 4 because they've also got 0%. So bring it fucking on.
Fuck yes. It has been a year. Leprechaun has been just on our minds. It was like, it's very special. It's very important. It's one of a kind. And this sequel,
it's really the spiritual heart of Tex Chris Dave Saw, perhaps.
Yeah. It really opened up our minds in a lot of ways.
I'm going to play Celtic music underneath this when we're getting touching and reflective about it.
Do da do da do da punch dance. Do da do.
Punch dance is the theme of these two episodes, this and next week's.
yeah. But like these two movies, like, they didn't lose or change the tone. Mm-hmm. It's got the same funniness with the same like gore. Like right early on, he's on the street and he like makes this weird little symbols on the ground. He picks up his cane, he spins it in the air, moves his hand away, and he uses it as like a made up Celtic compass. It was so weird and cool. And then some dude on the street.
It's the weirdest powers. Yeah. Like I can hear this will point me in the direction of his gold coin, right? Is that what he's following?
I think it was of the descendant of the person he was looking for.
Crazy.
Yeah. And so then doing that on the street, some person just flips him a quarter, like he's panhandling.
He's doing a magic trick. Yeah. He's making a stick look like it's floating.
Yeah. He's like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
And then he's
quarter.
Like, you're gold, maybe. And then he tries to hand him, like, he's like, I'm a talent agent or whatever. He's like, here's my
card.
And he's got that gold ring on.
And
Leprechaun reaches out and just plucks his finger off.
Just like pops it off as if it was just like a thing just like loosely hanging off of his hand.
And then what does he do?
And then he licks his finger and says, finger looking good.
Oh, my God.
But that... I was hoping for a split second before that amazing ripoff happened that he would follow up with this talent agent. And this talent agent would, like, start putting the leprechaun in certain situations. Like, I could see the plot potentially going in that direction.
That should have been the post-credit scene. Which
Leprechaun had auditions for a bunch of things. Just big 90s. This is 94, so he's like auditioning for Forrest Gump, auditioning for Apollo 13.
Oh my God. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's another character we didn't talk too much about. Eager security officer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that guy, he was just this like the most intense police officer I've seen in like 10 movies on this podcast. But he was just a security guard outside a place. Like, where's the other perp? And Morty's like, what the hell are you talking
just
about?
Just the cliche security guard. And cliche from even, life more than movies. The security guard that thinks he's a cop.
Yes, and he went so far as to say, it's like, I take my job very seriously.
No, really? Did not see that.
And then I thought it was such a great like way with him, if he wasn't in there, like, you know, it could have been anybody. They didn't need to put someone in like that. But what that did is that supported the fact that Cody seemed like a murderer, a serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of why he was like on the run from everyone at the same time. Like,
well, that's like, that's the thing about these movies is that in Leprechaun, there's always one, maybe two people who know and see and believe Leprechaun. No one else believes shit. Yeah. No one else is just like, come on, get out of here until they get killed by the Leprechaun themselves.
Exactly. That homeless man did well. He just lost his gold tooth.
Yeah, absolutely. He was totally spared.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He's just like, oh, nice gold tooth. And he shouldn't have smiled so big. Otherwise, Leprechaun might not have even noticed it.
Yeah, but it's cool that Leprechaun doesn't kill people unless they're fucking with his gold or directly fucking with him in some way.
No, but he'll fucking hurt them if they can get gold. If you've got gold on your finger or gold in your mouth, like, that's not standing in my way. I'm going to get that gold. Yeah.
He'll, and that's what the homeless person was saying at first. Mm-hmm. He's like, he hurt me, he'll hurt someone else.
I wonder if it's, you know, a fatal flaw for the leprechaun with the more he sees gold, the more he needs to acquire gold. Mm. If that, like, now, if you take a coin away, then he's kind of screwed. But if you take one of his things that he's recently acquired away, like his tooth or that gold ring, would that also debilitate him? Or is it his 50 gold coins that are the source and entirety of his power, and the rest is just kind of flair?
So you're saying he's got, like, a bank account minimum that he can't go below?
That's what I'm wondering. If those coins are essential to him, and then, like, all the other gold is just for shits and giggles, or once he adds to his collection, does that maximize his power? And
yeah, so the first one and the second one conflict in that way, in that the first one suggests that he has less power when he doesn't have all his gold. The second one suggests that the person who possesses that stolen gold is has like a talisman to protect them.
Absolutely. I was going to bring that up because he didn't seem to not be able to use his powers.
He could use his powers like crazy
to
still
full force. In the first one, he couldn't. A simple coin being taken away, and he would just zap the little green lightning bolts, and they would just be duds.
He could do less, remember? Because he was able to do a very small amount of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like,
but that's not really addressed at all in this one.
No, not at all. Mm. He's got full power, you know? Like, he hasn't been stuck in a box for like 1,000 years or whatever.
Which I like both. Both are interesting. Whatever, you know? Do what you gotta do, leprechaun.
That's great. You rarely get something that introduces a little monster or something that has logic where, like, let's explore it in two different directions. We can do both. We'll do two movies. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I'd love to see it work both ways. It was different circumstances in the first movie and the second, and so there were different sort of the rules were applied differently.
Yeah, I don't mind the different rules. It doesn't serve what is the heart of Leprechaun.
Yes, and I love the most important rule that I learned about this one. You might think it's wrought iron. No, it's that the leprechaun can get drunk, and that he does not like a Canadian blend of whiskey. Has to be Irish whiskey. He steals the homeless right in the beginning. He steals the homeless guy's whiskey by like dragging it into that tree trunk, and then he comes out in the greatest reveal ever. He's like, "Leprechaun's back," and we're both like, "Woo!" And then he spits it out
immediately.
Yeah, he's like, "Canadian blend.
Ah,
it's got to be Irish whiskey." Down. Yeah, he throws it. So hilarious. And he uses it later to, like, he pours it in the homeless man's mouth after stealing his tooth.
Sanitize his tooth.
Yeah.
I call him to, like, oh, that's nice. That's nice of him to, like, you know, just, like, alcoholize the wound.
Yeah, and also that's just, like, a hilarious thing to just be cackling while you do, and that guy runs off like, what the fuck just happened to me? And he's like, nah, fuck you.
The overacting is so fun and enjoyable, too. God. Like, to see when that guy was by the cops and explaining, like, leprechaun as if it was just common sense.
That's very leprechaun-y. And they did the right thing in this movie by introducing a very super kooky character in Morty, just like they had in the original one with Ollie and his friend.
Absolutely. What was his friend's name again? I can't remember. Or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Sam was, or whoever that guy was, slow.
You do. Right. Slow. You do need, like, little characters like that and other character actors to fill out a silly movie like this, I think.
Who always remain confident and wisecracking and, like, act as, like, the good version of the leprechaun.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. I think that as silly as leprechaun movies are, and the fact that we watched a 0% Rotten Tomatoes movie, they did a really good job making this movie. And I'm not saying that as, like, I had a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they put in effort. If I were to try to make an homage to the first Leprechaun movie, it wouldn't have been as good as this.
No, it's, you know? Like we said before, good camp. Like, it's just a good example of good camp. They're leaning into
and following your own themes and rules and feeling. Like, who could make a sequel that is that true to the first one and so brand new?
Yeah, I feel like, the first Child's Play is just so great in the same kind of vibe of, like, a good, campy, well done.
Yeah.
Leaning into the logic in a way that's very satisfying and enjoyable. And also, at the occasional moments, kind of creepy.
Yeah, it has their moments. Right?
Yeah, and it's terrifying for kids to watch something like this. As we've had scaredy cats tell us that, like, Leprechaun scared the fuck out of them when they were a kid. It's hilarious to think about now, but if you're, 7 years old and seeing this thing running around, that's enough to terrify you.
Yeah, seeing it use a steam wand to burn Michael McDonald's face apart, that gore was creepy.
That gore was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah.
Should we go with some Instagram comments?
Instagram. Yeah, I guess we could.
On our mom and dad post, Catbits said, great movie. Sadly, some people's reviews aren't good, but personally, I thought it was a hoot. I read that in the most, like, aggressive way.
You really did.
Assuming that she read, or assuming that Catbits listened to our episode and then made that comment passively at us.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing that makes sense.
Especially if she put some in all caps.
And then we got another comment here on Mom and Dad from our good friend Esme Graham. Hey, Esme. Awesome. Been wanting to watch this movie.
Don't do it, Esme.
Esme.
Don't you dare.
So it'll disappoint you. And Cat Bits, I don't know that it's a great movie. I don't know that I fully agree with you on that one.
Some people really like it. I'm not quite sure why. Like, just
watch Mayhem, watch The Babysitter, watch those movies where they like take this, specifically Mayhem, where they take the rage or the, you know, giving into your impulses concept, mm-hmm. and they do not sleep on the writing, character development, like showing you cool shit, making you like the characters that you're following through the movie, being funny.
Gives you an actual ending to the story.
A fucking ending.
Instead of ending abruptly with people tied up and...
Yeah. If you like movies, a good one to avoid is Mom and Dad.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel like a full movie.
Yeah, and sure, there's a couple things that are fine, but... It's so bad around those things.
It's like aggressively annoying at times too. Mm-hmm. Like just that fucking whole pool table scene, builds a pool table montage,
you put
destroys
your right
it.
Hand in, you put your left hand out.
Just YouTube the best scenes from Mom and Dad, and you'll get you'll get the most you can get out of it that way.
They're all in the trailer. So
are they?
Yep.
Nice.
That's how I knew about
the trailer recaps with Chris and Dave.
This has been trailer failures.
Trailer failures. I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you were referring to, the segment title, Trailer Failures.
Yeah, you get it.
I thought you were saying that's what we should call that short in Southbound.
Oh.
Their trailer was like breaking down. I'm like, okay, that's okay.
Okay, Dave.
Genius is a segment. I got it now. Figure
we're
it
there.
Out.
So thank you, Cat Bits and Esme Graham, so much for your comments on Instagram.
Thanks. Leave your own comments and leave us a review on iTunes.
Yeah, please. Head on down to iTunes and let us know what you think.
You know, there's a lot of you that are enjoying this podcast more than we could ever count, and only a few of you have left reviews, so fuck the rest of you. Leave a fucking goddamn review, you pieces of shit. No. We don't ask for anything. We give you free content every goddamn week, and you can't even leave a fucking iTunes review.
Chris, just... It's okay.
No! I'm pissed!
I know.
In 1,000 years, you'll leave an iTunes review.
Yeah, we're gonna...
Alcohol, huh?
It's something that we've been missing sorely, but
good and bad. I don't know. It's like, it's just lateral. I think, you know, like there's good things that happen when we drink. There's bad things happen when we drink.
Yeah. So the
lateral,
the up and downs on the volume, the yelling and coughing into the mic,
totally right.
The burping and stuff like that. We apologize for, but the enthusiasm for Leprechaun and
we will not apologize.
Never.
For.
And the, I think the most appropriate way to ring in St. Patrick's Day.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, scaredy cats. That's why we do what we do.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for sticking with us, Scaredy Cats, for another awesome St. Patrick's Day Leprechaun episode of the podcast. This is Texas State Sun Masker. I'm Chris Vandenberg.
I'm David Sombra. And as dang always,
chaos reigns, chaos reigns, chaos reigns, chaos reigns. Canadian blend, chaos reigns.
Have a happy St. Patrick's Day, scaredy cats, and please, please get drinking.
We'll see you next time.